Hi everyone, I'm Jonathan Ciboni, founder and CEO of Luxury Insight, the leading data intelligence platform for luxury fashion and beauty brands. Welcome to our new podcast in partnership with Fashion Network. Today, I'm excited and honored to host Pascal Morand, Executive President of the Fédération de la Haute Couture et de la Mode, in an exclusive interview with Godfrey Dini, Global Editor-in-Chief of Fashion Network. Enjoy the journey and good podcast.
Good day, everyone. Today, our guest is Pascal Morand. He is the executive president of the Fédération de la Haute Couture et de la Mode in Paris. That is French high fashion's governing body. And he has had that job for, well, quite a few years.
Yeah, more than 8 years.
More than 8 years.
8 years and a half.
And tell me, how did you ever get to become the executive president of the Fédération?
Oh, that's a long story that I'm going to try to make it short. I was first not in fashion, and then in fashion, and then I left fashion, and then back. Yeah. So, but in my last position, I was asked by that was in late 2015. By Ralph Toledano, who was then the president, and also Sidney Toledano, and the other members of the executive committee, Francesca Bellettini, Guillaume de Seine, just to join, if I would be ready to join as an executive president, to support the policy, to work and to do that for Paris and for the fashion industry, for the luxury industry, et cetera, et cetera. But then at that time, I had other projects, but I said yes. But that's the end of the story. That's not my story in fashion.
Listeners should know that the four folks that Pascal has referred to are all major players in the Paris fashion and luxury ecosystem. Ralph Toledano has been president of Karl Lagerfeld and Chloe. Sidney Toledano was the CEO of Christian Dior. Francesca Bellettini was the CEO of Saint Laurent. And Guillaume de Seine was a major executive in Hermès.
Yeah, and I'd mention Bruno Pavlovsky because he was one of them, and he's not so the former the president of the Federation.
So that's partly what's so special about the Federation in France. It is supported and backed by these major luxury brands, which makes one of the reasons that Paris has maintained its status as the single most important fashion.
Yeah, the important thing being it's also very democratic, and we also have other companies and CEOs in the executive committee, and two others and great people too. I'm talking about like Elsa Alonso with the CEO of Rick Owens and Anouk Duranto of Isabel Marant. I don't say that to mention to quote names.
Yeah.
But it's one way to enter into that strong ecosystem. And the Federation, we do have 100 members, and we are French, but not only French, because 2/3 of the brands are French, but 1/3 are not French. It's very international, global by essence.
Let's begin the beginning. Where were you born and how did you begin your career?
I was born in Paris, and I was just I lived both in Paris and in the east of France, in Alsace. And I graduated at HEC, the business school. But then there I decided to become an economist, and which I did. So I made another master of research and a PhD in economics. And I worked on, at that time, very much and I still have done that afterwards, on economics of information and uncertainty, complexity, the impact on the market economy. So I had, let's say, a classical career as an economist, but then I was also somehow a academic entrepreneur just before joining fashion. Between 1985 and 1987, that's a long time ago, I was the so-called scientific director for new master's degrees and a PhD program, an exchange program in ESCP Business School, which is supposed to be one of the very great ones. And then I was also teaching in HSC at the Sorbonne and so on. So, and writing and making research and writing. But then I jumped into fashion. That was the story.
What was your first step?
Well, I was at that time the Institut Français de la Mode, the French Fashion Institute, had just been created, founded by Pierre Berger, and but with the support of, let's say, the entrepreneurs organization, textile and clothing and haute couture, and also the Ministry of Industry in this country, and the Chamber of Commerce and Industry of Paris, and so on. So there was also the institutional characteristic. But then things happened so that I was approached to launch and to be the second director. There had been one director before me 1 year. It had been created in 1986. And the fact that there was like... it's a young academic entrepreneur and knew how to develop master's degrees, in that case, including design, management, technology, and design. And also, so I could be considered as capable to do that for, these big institutions. But
once again, for our listeners, the Institut Français de la Mode is a pretty unique French institution, and arguably the first institution that was created to create master's degrees in luxury and high fashion management.
In the beginning, that was mainly master's degrees,
yes,
in fashion management and also executive education, which developed quickly.
But that didn't exist in other business schools anywhere. It's a very French idea. Yeah.
It's a French idea linked to the idea that education, which would play a key role for the future of the fashion industry. And then we did also a lot of studies and consulting, but sort of public consulting for the European Commission, for the French government, etc. And then it developed, and it has become much bigger that time.
So initially, when it was a relatively small institute, there were hundred students.
We had 50 students, but quickly we had 1,000 people in executive education and developing other programs. So 100 after some years.
Okay.
But the point is that I didn't have any link with fashion. I didn't know about fashion. But my credibility in this field was the relationship to art and creativity, which happened as I am a musician. I'm still a musician. At that time, I played in a rock band. I played keyboards. The name of the rock band was King Lear, and it we did quite a good concert, and we had a good a record which on the radios and things, and that was very much appreciated by Pierre Berger, and when I told him what were my motivation and as an economist, to be an engaged economist, and not only to make mathematical economics in a laboratory and things, and not only strictly research and teaching. And then when he asked me my relationship towards fashion, I said that I explained the things. Then he said, "Oh, that's a very good point," and that was a key point for me to work with him.
Pierre Berger, once again, was a remarkable figure. He was the partner, lifelong partner of Yves Saint Laurent, one of the all-time great designers, and turned it into a major corporation. He was also variously the president of the Paris Opera.
Yeah.
He was the person who led a revolution in France back in the 60s when he created the idea of supporting the créateur in the 60s, Saint Laurent, Mugler, Montana, people like that.
There have been two key persons at that time, Pierre Berger and Didier Grimbach.
Didier Grimbach.
Your
predecessor.
In a way. He had this double role of president and executive too, but exactly. And I worked with him also a lot at the French Fashion Institute.
What I also remember about the FM in the beginning was you talk about the Paris ecosystem of fashion and luxury. You were very good at tapping into people to ask them to come and lecture and speak. That's part of the tradition of the school, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But that's also part of the job, of an academic job. But it has developed so much.
Yeah.
very much also since we have it had developed during this all this. I mean, it is that years, and then also one of the things we have done in the recent years with Ralph and the executive committee is to integrate the very traditional school, which was the École de la Chambre Syndicale, which was the school of Yves Saint Laurent, of Karl Lagerfeld, of Valentino, and thing, and now it has been part of IFM, but with a big project. So that's another thing. But then in that case, you have many people just coming from the industry, but at the same time, you have also faculty and research, like in any academic institution.
Because that was a school, the Chambre Syndicale, was to teach creative designers, not management.
Yes, exactly.
Parallel. So, but now you've integrated the two together.
Everything is integrated within this big, big project, a national project of IFM.
Because when I first remember meeting IFM, wasn't it based near Avenue Montaigne?
Initially? Near Avenue Montaigne, in a charming hotel particulier.
Okay.
Well, talking about that, I have some likes of nostalgia coming up into my mind, right?
So I first met you, I was invited to give a lecture on how to become a fashion editor one day, and when we first met. Then you moved.
I remember when I invited you then.
Right. But now, for the listeners, once again, it's really very impressive. EFM, unifying the creative and the management areas, have created a very special, unique school, which has moved to a new location. Tell us all about that.
Oh yeah, well that was a big project. I mean, it is led by Xavier Romaté, who joined some years ago. But it's a big project. But that was a long story because there has been mission of the French government that it was endorsed with. On creating like the so-called Cité de la Mode or Cité de la Mode du Design and so on. So IFM already moved there in 2007, and then a big work but then I was no more at IFM myself because I left in 2006, and then there's been big works, huge ones, just to do so and to get to the point where I know it's like 10,000 square meters and you go from vocational studies to PhDs and including bachelor's degrees, design and management and master's degrees. Let's say all together we did it. No, there are new great ambitions.
For anyone entering, a young person with a goal of a career in fashion, it's a brilliant school. It's on a modernist building, built on the bank of the Seine, in a very dynamic new institution.
And realized, for the whole external part at least, realized by great architects, which are Dominique Jacob and Brendan McFarlane, Jacob McFarlane. And it has been one of the seldom just great architectural projects in the last decades in Paris. Yeah. I must say that, and this green building just at Austerlitz, formerly, yeah.
Now, tell me, when you first arrived at the Fédération, what were the goals and the plans that you set, or collectively?
At the executive committee set.
There
was two axes, two dimensions, and the third one linked to both big dimensions. One thing was to not only to maintain, but to reinforce Paris as a global capital. Which can look a little bit like simple, cool, but it's big work. That was one thing, and we came back to that. And the other thing, the other point was the other job to reinforce the other job of the Federation, meaning somehow the classical job of a trade association in any country, like you do that for the automobile industry, the steel industry, and all the industries. And but doing so that it would become much stronger, while giving more services to them, bringing more services to the members, and working also on the big challenges of the industry, the legal challenges, the social challenges, the employment, and the innovation and sustainability. Challenges which are getting more and more important. So that had also implications to work to include without being an academic, but working with consultant expert and academics like some other think tank, and developing the advocacy role.
Let's talk about that. It's an essential component for the future of fashion and luxury that it is eco-responsible. And what has the Federation been doing, either individually as itself, as a unit, or working with Brussels, where a lot of these decisions are finally made?
Well, what we did on that, first we started precisely in 2019.
Yeah.
Brands have done many things for many years. Yeah. But we, especially big brands, but we started like precisely 5 years ago. So recruiting, just like a team, like experts and a head of sustainable development, I think, and myself being much committed, and other people, member of the team. So we did several things. There's one thing that we immediately did was for fashion weeks, because you know we always talk about like the ecology, sustainability. Corporate and social responsibility for like also for events, for the industry, for the value chain of the industry of manufacturing and logistics and fabrics and materials and industrial processes. But we live also in a place in a world where events are very important, especially our event. But let's say there are always events. VivaTech recently is great. It's an extremely successful event. Rock concerts are great events. You have events in any aspect, and this is not going to stop. Some people thought it would stop during the pandemic, and that everything would be digital, but that doesn't work that way. So then we had just to make the diagnosis that there was no tool. So we have built up, in partnership with the company, with PwC, a tool for eco-design for event. And we for each brand, but this is the same event which enables to consolidate the data to and in the perspective of seeing the Paris Fashion Week in terms of ecological impact, the small festival having a big economic and cultural impact. So that's one thing, and we also work a lot on the industrial and eco-design aspect. And in terms of measuring, in terms of eco-design tools, and in terms of bringing services, and also being part of debates, of course, in France, but also like in Europe, where we are, for instance, a voting member of the committee, which is in charge of determining the criteria and the measuring of the environmental performance. But there are many other examples. But that has been key, and we did that very much with the support of the brands, especially, and also of the groups, to work on that aspect, which is getting more and more important.
There were recent news from Brussels about how brands were being asked to be able to show exactly where the raw materials were coming from.
Well, that's, yeah.
And which caused what seemed a very logical and correct thing, but did cause a certain amount of polemic by producers in some poorer countries, saying that this imposed an unfair burden on them. What's your thinking on that?
Yeah, it's important, but there are several aspects in this point.
Yeah.
One thing is traceability. Brands need to know more and more just to identify. And there's been like, there are no like IT tools and company, and not only startups working and with the brands and on traceability and brands working on that. So that's one thing. Knowing that it is sometimes difficult to know exactly when you go to when you go upstream in the whole, you see just all the fibers, let's say agriculture, where exactly it comes from. That's anyway a challenge. But that is not so much disagreed in a way. But the point is how to do that. And there's another point which is absolutely crucial, which is the database challenge. There is a huge impact. It's if we want to measure a performance, but this is works also for social performance, you need data, and these data need to be reliable. And I can tell you that it's very technical, because when you enter into database, you need impact database. You need to have a degree of granularity, which is refined enough so that a certified quality or high level, just high quality fabrics, for instance, is not evaluated exactly the same way as the fabrics of the same nature, which is absolutely not the same type of quality. And there are also big debates, which are far from being over, on the concept of durability in the time. The funny thing is that, you know, philosopher, I've worked on time and durability and duration during centuries, and they still have not agreed. Anyway, I know everybody has to agree in 6 months. So that is, I can tell you it's tricky, but it is very important.
In fashion, I always say, as in golf and tennis, there are the Grand Slam tournaments. There are four big ones in golf, four in tennis. There's one this week in Paris, Roland Garros. But there's also the big four fashion capitals, London, Milan, New York, Paris. But different from the sports is somehow or other, Paris remains the uncontested leader in the area, while it's respectful of all these other cities. Why do you think it's maintained this position as primus inter pares, first among equals?
Well, I should bounce back and ask you why, because you attend yourself all these events, which I don't know that, because sometimes we have to see other fashion weeks and shows. But so it's difficult, and also knowing that we have to remain like a humble and to see always what needs to be done and what has been done. Hmm. But let's say there are several things, and there's let's say another way to say that, to if you allow me just to use conceptual reference. There is this quite recent concept in management theory, which is called like the field configuring event theory.
Pre-field
configuring field event.
Okay.
Like, for instance, a good example is the Grammy Awards. I mean, either you're part of the Grammy Awards music or you're not. And that theoretical papers on that. So what makes it work? So in that case, what makes it is this primus inter pares rule, and there are several things. Quite a number, let's say, in general, I identify seven, but I will not mention the seven because it would be too long doing that now. But let us say there is an ecosystem which is working strongly with the big brands and important established brands and also the groups, the commitment, and a whole ecosystem in Paris, with production houses and press offices and all the talents. I talked, I was in another country, and they're moving, an important brand is moving to Paris because they find here all the talents, and in any aspect, and you know exactly also what we mean with the hidden face of the iceberg. But another thing that, let me mention two other things. One thing is the innovation policy and the selection policy. And the Federation has a contribution in that. And as you know, because you have participate in these stories and selection committees, like in academics. I mean, it's very tough. It is very well organized. There is like a great, beautiful team doing that very precisely. But then we do not select the guest. The journalists and buyers changing every time are selecting the guests. So it's very selective. And another point also linked, I don't want to emphasize too much what we do because that would be like, just to see that with distance. But what we do all together is innovate. We constantly innovate. We have to innovate in terms also of locations. We work on that. We have to, with the pandemic, we had to innovate when we decided to launch an online fashion week in a few weeks, which we did with this partner like Clutch Metrics. And we always have to go forward. The point is, if we say, okay, it's fine, we are number one in I can say also in Champions League, it doesn't work that way. And so that is very important. And also there's the flavor of Paris, but we know about that, this structural poetry, I can say.
As you said, I participate occasionally in your committees to decide who might enter. And I always think fashion in France is a little bit like your fine wine. If you look at the great wines of Bordeaux, every year 10 or 20 or 30% or 40% of the barrels are made into a second wine. They're not quite good enough. And one of the key things about Paris is you've kept the level very high. It's very...
No concession.
Yeah, it's very... if you're a young designer, I hope you'll come to Paris one day and show, it's very hard to get on the on the Chambre Syndicales, or sorry, I'm using the old name, the Fédération's official listing, and rightly so, and rightly so.
Yeah, also we do, what I didn't mention, I said I would do it, we have these two jobs at the Federation, but we have also launched a policy for supporting emerging brands, which is very active.
Yeah.
Which is also linked, but not only linked to the official calendar, because we have this role of supporting young brands, emerging brands, and it was like 60 of 80 around the world, and we of course we pay attention to the French and European ones and so on, etc. But at the same time, we are the global platform. So as you say it's tough. It is very selective and it's tough. And all the brands, when you have with the members have an access for instance to the official calendar, but the non-member, the guest, must go through that. And sometimes they can be like well known, and they could wonder and say, what are these French people asking us? Again, like this kind of French pride, or just to see who do they believe they are. But in fact, they understand, because we explain. It's not French or non-French. It is the role of configuring events, just place to be.
Once again, for our listeners, if you look at the history of the Fédération and the fashion weeks in Paris, back in the 60s, France opened up its fashion season to international designers from Japan, from Italy, from Russia, from all over the world. Even today, if you look at the season, I'm guessing now, but half of the season almost, certainly is by foreign-born designers, and a good 40% are by brands not based in France.
I think more than that.
More than that.
No, not only I think, but more than 50%. Among the members, two-thirds of the members are French, one-third are not French. But if you include the guests, most of the guests are not French. That's an important point, and it's nice to recall that that this international way started very very early, and the first one to come to Paris, but he had studied the École de la Chambre Syndicale with the Semiaké. And then we have, like as you mentioned, that the Japanese great designers coming, and they. And then the coming also from Belgium and
Belgium
from like
school,
any countries, and recently quite a number of Americans also joined or tried, were applied to join.
I think in a context, I don't want to mix fashion with politics, but if a context of a great concern about immigration in Western Europe, it's remarkable. It's a key part of France's and Paris's position has been that open arms to non-French people come in with their talents and creativity.
And this is in a way kind of, it is very contemporary, but in a way it's also a kind of tradition. And Pierre Berger liked to recall that fashion, when he said in the 80s, it was in the continuation of the school of Paris in painting between World War One and World War Two, and I can add before World War One, and it shows also how much the fact of being international, to open to like cosmopolitan in a way, international is a strength for Paris and in this country, because there are not many sectors of the industry where there is, like I would say, a French leadership, but which is basically based on this international openness and competitiveness.
Looking ahead, what do you see the major issues confront fashion in France in the future?
Well, for us, there's like both a value and an axiom, which is like create for us.
Is
create for the Federation and for Paris Fashion Week, which is creativity. And of course, know-how. Especially in the hall for the Couture Week, the Haute Couture Week. The Haute Couture Week has become strong again, and the Menswear Week has become strong again when we look at the figures. You know, when we look at the figures, we have like several KPIs. A good KPI is the one which is this media impact value, which is There are some others, but which have been determined and scientifically done by Launch Metrics, and we represent 60% of the total median pay value of fashion events.
Worldwide. Paris, you mean.
Yeah. So that the thing is to still stick on creativity and also link to savoir-faire and know-how. That's one thing.
That international attention of consumers and fans in cities all over the world and countries.
Yeah, but
it's still so strong.
Yeah, but we carry these values.
Yeah,
like we are not the other one to carry. We carry these values in an extreme way. We are not the one to carry that. Not the only one to carry them. The Milan Fashion Week does also carry these values, and still done too. But with let's say young brands into the schools, etc. And we can say also that for could say that for New York and so on. But let's say we embody very much this dimension, and let's say at the European level, at the European political level, with the Camera della Moda or equivalent, let's say in Italy and some other fashion council, we carry this value, and we have the duty to carry this value, which represents very much creativity and cultural, represent very much this, let's say not only French but European humanistic value. So that's one thing. And there's another point, but we already mentioned that a bit earlier, is the fact that the new thing is that fashion and luxury haven't been a regulated sector like others are, and now it's becoming a regulated sector. So regulated means labeling, means all this regulation, due diligence directive, ESPR, which is another like regulation, and they are in France, they are in Europe. So this sector and the companies are getting more and more, and have to be more and more accustomed to just to work in a regulated environment, to manage this regulation. And we also have to take care that these regulation are not going to harm the development of young companies, emerging brands, designers in our case, but let's say SMEs more globally. Because when you have a lot of administrative stuff to make, to do, and to accomplish, it's not easy, and it takes time, and it takes money. So that's one of the things. And I can maybe also mention one important thing at this moment, that we always need innovation. And we will need innovation because there is this crisis. There is this crisis of the wholesale market. We know what happens with the marketplaces, especially the European ones, and that makes it difficult. So there will be a renewal, and there will be like innovative models just to be built up.
How do you think fashion in France and in Paris has done in terms of inclusivity?
I think, myself, I compare fashion to other sectors, not only in France. So of course fashion has to be exemplary. But I can say if I compare fashion with other industries, like I mentioned, the automobile industry, the building industry, the consumer goods industry, I find this much more inclusive. I mean, the reality is that if you look the fashion and the fashion professionals, it can come from, as you say, it's very open. You can come from like any countries. You just have to be inside the fashion and to understand the codes of fashion. So maybe we can say that the fact of having codes make it non-inclusive, but I mean every sector has its codes. So then it can be probably even more somehow. But I don't say okay, it's cool, nothing to be done. But let's say it paves the way in a way, like in art somehow, and like creative industries. We could say that about music, but let's say fashion is very strong in this country. So we have to keep on, and it's always a thing that everything is, I mean, we live in a world where indicators are always like mandatory. It's not not I think, there I am. It's more like sort of I can't, there I am, or I am can't, there I am. So, but we can go further if you want on that point.
Ever since the tragedy of 9/11 20 years ago, it took place during Fashion Week, I think, people have always been conscious in the industry of the potential threat of an outrage at a factory in Fashion Week. What are you doing in terms of security? What have you been doing?
We do a lot. We work, but we can't. There's never zero risk. Yeah. But what I can say is that we work closely with the police, department, the so-called Prefecture de Police. It will be maybe too much to say that we have a partnership because it doesn't exist somehow, but a strong cooperation we do have, and also with other public institutions. It takes time. And also, there are also great members of the team and directors just to work closely. I will not, like, if I start mentioning one name of my team, yeah. I would love to do that, but I'm going to mention all of them because it's just like a strong and united team and high level. I'm very lucky to head that team. But let's say that implies a lot of commitments and working with the institution. And to give an example, an illustration of that, what we have done for the coming coming sessions in June, yes. Menswear yes. and Couture very Week, yeah. is we have working with the support of the biggest companies to set up a guide, a security guide that has been sent to all the companies and also to the members and to the guests, because you also know that the police department, the police forces, will be absolutely extremely busy and occupied by the Olympics. So private security forces will be more important, and will play the essential role in the coming weeks. But let's say the Prefecture de Police has a very attentive eye on all that.
Exception because of this great project, the Olympic Games in Paris in July and August, you've been forced to move up.
Yeah. The Prefecture de Police asked us to do so by 1 week.
Ah, okay. Which you did. But otherwise, it won't alter the déroulement, the actual operation of the season, or...
Yeah, this is something like exceptional. Then we will publish first the dates for next year. But they say in all that, to mention the Prefecture de Police, but also the City Hall with whom we work well, and in that case here the Olympic Committee, and so on.
Finally, the big buzzword in many industries in the last 6 months is AI.
Yeah,
how do you see it impacting fashion?
Well, you know, the AI is fundamental. There is a whole part of AI which is more incremental than disruptive. You know, in this whole digital revolution, we are experiencing two revolutions. One is the digital revolution, digital tech revolution, and the other revolution is the ecological revolution. But the second one is very much depending on the measuring, progressing, R&D, developing, and the will of going on. But the digital revolution is just like any technological industrial revolution, is just arriving very strongly, and we are let's say not exactly at the very beginning, but almost. So the funny thing is that we talk a lot about AI now, and we start to do that because of GPT-4. We didn't do that for GPT-3 and GPT-2. So, but 2 years ago, that was Metaverse, and then before, and then also like 3D printing, subject on which I worked a lot, and then big data and so on. But let's say, if we take the case of AI, many things, there are two aspects. We must distinguish the impact of, let's say, the so-called predictive AI, and which are very much used and will be more and more used in all the models of the industry. And then the point, the new things, which we talk a lot, of course, is the question of generative AI and up to which point it will arrive. I mean, it is because AI has a huge of implication in management, in industrial organization, in computation of everything, and this part, let's say more the predictive part, is very much linked to the compatibility and interconnection between information systems, and so you have like predictive aspect for sales and marketing, etc., which is connected to the supply chain and to the so-called PLM tools and to the lifecycle analysis environment. But that concerning generative AI, well, you know, it is a great source of, let's say, stress in the cinema environment.
Yes.
And in journalism, yeah. But then the question is, I mean, technologicals has always been to use as tools. The question is, what will we do with that? And also, what will mean embodiment and you know, creativity? So it's almost a philosophical question. But we know that, of course, you will have so-called artists which will be AIs and so on. But at the moment, for, let's say, the neurophysiological matters, which also the link between the mind and the body, all that things which determine not only the fact because you have like three dimension and not one or two dimension creativity. But it will convert the source of creativity. So will it lead to battles like in the Space Odyssey 2001 and Kubrick things with Hell just threatening? But I'm not sure. And maybe it will happen. But it doesn't change the human power of creativity and. Of course, the neuronal, not the symbolic, but neuronal AI has an impact. So we cannot put it aside. And I'm not talking simply about what this simple prompt story that's happening now that I don't know. It will go further, but let's say it raises, I say it again, the philosophical question of the European being and the European, what characterizes the European being is not only producing things, it's just creativity. Bringing novelty, and what does that mean? It's bringing novelty, so everything should be done in favor of appropriating AI in any aspect, including generative aspects. You know, I give you an example. I know. Some years ago, there was this great. I don't have his name in head. No, it's no like a saxophonist. And he had an AI reproducing exactly its patterns, so it could have been desperate. You know what he has done? What he has done is just okay. That's cool. It's another opportunity. So he's dialoguing with the AI, and it gives idea of creativity. So he's playing on the patterns on his own patterns. So I think we have to see that at the very stimulating challenge and opportunity. The problem is that, let's say, if you look at the total population, many people don't like to change. And that is the point, because this change is imposed by this industrial revolution. And that is creating distortion, because people have to adapt and to anticipate, and it is not easy for many people. At this moment, you know, you have this big political and European debate and things. But do you attend often to debates, and do you listen to people to say, okay, what is going to happen with AI? Not many talk about that. And this is exactly what's happening. So we have to be on the edge, and we, let's say, creative people as a sector, we have to be in the forefront of that to explore and to be even stronger. In AI and using this as a strong, let's say, a fostering tool for imagination.
Finally, we have a lot of young readers, and I always ask experienced individuals like yourself on our podcast, what would their two or three bits of advice they would give to a young person, young man or woman, thinking of entering in their management or creativity into our industry?
Well, I would recommend the fact that being creative and excellent and having a great product, and it's different. It's not the same models. We're talking to an entrepreneur or talking to designers. It's very important, but it is not enough. And it's not only just to work. It's not only the fact of doing it, but you know, let's say, X years ago, you may, as you remember, as we remember. the photos, the image were already as important, very important, maybe not as important as the design. But the thing is that today, this new, the communication, of course, the image, but more than that, the perception just to be given, and not only by having the number of followers on Instagram is very important. And I say it's very important not to anticipate all the perception effect, while at the same time for this young brand, especially designer, not losing their own creative identity. And another thing is, it is very important not to confuse creation or creativity and innovation. And what I mean by that is that I've seen quite a number of times in the last decades, in my own experience, let's say brands or designers having the references and role models like in the past and wanting to do that in the same way. But at the same time, the conditions have changed. So there need to be innovation and in business models in particular. And we have seen, and no, not just like developing, having its own e-shop is one thing, but just one small thing among so many. So that means that, let's say, for a designer who is launching like his brand, at the moment, he must be very much concentrated on his own job, like products, or also maybe the image around and so on. But he must be very much supported. And after a while, that's been always the same rule by a manager, just that he respects and both respect with each other. Let's say something having bringing another kind of rationality, but both people and the second one in particular has to be very also innovative, because we have industry basically in fine. We live in an industrial revolution, an ecological revolution, and a societal revolution with a lot of tension in the society at this moment. Not only this country, anywhere, as we know in the US how strong it is, and what is happening all over the world, even without talking about the war that we experience at this moment in the world. So all this is bringing a whole new set of conditions. And in that case, the answer must be going ahead, looking forward, going forward, and innovating. But innovating doesn't mean necessarily creating. In your new business model, it doesn't mean necessarily to creativity in the products, in collections, and so on. But let's say innovating know-how. And let's say sustainable consciousness. So this is the four parameters on which each identity and designers, also entrepreneurs, has to build up an innovative combination within all these parameters.
Pascal Morand, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
A pleasure for me also to exchange with you, Godfrey.
Good.
Thank you.